Welcome to LedgerCast, a podcast all about the cryptocurrency ecosystem. My name is Brian Krogsgaard and my co-host is Josh Olsiewicz. If you enjoy the podcast, you can give it a 5-star rating or even a review in iTunes or Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. We would appreciate that very much. Also, feel free to shoot us your feedback at LedgerStatus on Twitter. We would appreciate that. In this episode, it's pretty much all technical. The previous episode was all news and there was so much to cover, we split it in two. So in this one, we talk about comparing U.S. dollar gains versus Bitcoin gains, how we approach our trading strategies with that in mind, how we consider when to be in alts, when to be in Bitcoin, or when to be in cash. I hope you enjoy this episode. We also do Coin of the Week and all that kind of stuff and answer some listener questions. Be sure to check out the show notes for some additional and complimentary text and charts and images, all that kind of stuff. To go along with this episode, it is a little tough sometimes talking about technical items in a podcast, so I hope the show notes will help with that. Go to ledgerstatus.com for more, and we hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to episode 3 of LedgerCast. I'm here with my regular co-host, Josh Olsiewicz. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Brian. You're really getting good at saying my last name, by the way. Few people in the world.
I practice.
Few people in the world can claim that honor, by the way.
As someone with a weird last name, I take the duty of pronouncing someone's name pretty seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell. So, it's really showing.
It's my pleasure. So we are doing pretty quick back-to-back episodes because the last one was all news-based and we are chart nerds at heart. So we're going to talk about the charts and the technical stuff today. Our primary topic, I kind of want to just jump right into it, is to talk about how we think about gains and losses and how we look at U.S. dollars versus Bitcoin in terms of both our gains and losses and how we chart and all that kind of stuff and why we think looking at them is important. So for starters, I think this is incredibly complicated for some people. So let's just use a simple example and start with Bitcoin. When you buy Bitcoin, let's say you bought it at $10,000, and then when it goes to $20,000, you've made a 100% return. That's very clear. You're really only trading that against the dollar. But now, let's say you bought Litecoin at $100 and you sold it at $200, you've also made a 100% return. But what did Bitcoin do during that time? So how do you think about what that gain meant versus the dollar or versus Bitcoin and how to think about it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people get confused and they don't realize that they actually lost value there by there's an opportunity cost. I don't even know if that's the right term, but that's how I'm going to think about it.
That's the right term.
Okay. When you're trading alts, you always have to be thinking about, was it better to just buy and hold Bitcoin? Like, should I even be trading in the first place? Is all what I'm doing a complete waste of time? Like, that's how you need to be answering these questions in my mind, because otherwise, why bother? Why spend the time and the trading fees and the heartache and the stress? So dealing with all this other nonsense, you know,
being in some coin,
position sizing, a time frame, how much and when, where's my exit? Do I use a stop loss? Just all this extra stress for new people who really don't know what they're doing, to be fair, and are just getting bulldozed constantly and just hoping.
And to be fair, none of us know what we're doing when we first start. Even if you come from somewhere where you're also trading crypto is a different beast.
Yeah, I mean, I've been here for 4 years and there are definitely days when I feel like I don't know what I'm doing either. So I get it. But it's especially confusing for new people, I think, when they're trying to do way too much without any background knowledge. You know, they're just thinking they can play these penny stocks and sell at 300x tomorrow. You know, that's just my general view, my general view of an altcoin person, which is not great, to be fair. But
So let's describe, well, no, I think you're right. And I'm willing to be honest here, like trading altcoins for me, because when I started trading altcoins in September, this has been a humbling experience in many ways because I've outperformed the altcoin market, which still means like I'm not even quite back to parity versus Bitcoin by trading altcoins. So let's describe even what that means. Let's take the $100 Litecoin purchase example. Let's just assume that when Litecoin was $100 and you bought it, it was worth 0.02 Bitcoin because that was around what its all-time high was versus Bitcoin during the summer. So when Litecoin was $100, let's say it was 0.02 Bitcoin. And when you sell it at $200, Litecoin might have been worth 0.01 Bitcoin. So you've actually lost 50% of the Bitcoin relative value, even though you doubled your money in US dollars, because in the same time frame that you doubled your money with your doubled your USD with Litecoin, Bitcoin could have quadrupled, which this was exactly what happened on most alts throughout the fall. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about relative value and opportunity cost, is because you could have been in Bitcoin and made four times the US dollars, and instead you were in Litecoin and made two times the US dollars. And let's say you invested one Bitcoin worth in that trade. Now you have half a Bitcoin. So you lost half a Bitcoin, even though you doubled your US dollars.
And what is,
do you think we've,
yeah, that's how I see it. I think that's correct. But what is also a hidden secret concern? Let me let you all in on a secret. Are you ready? You have to consider the forks as well. And this is what I think a lot of people aren't even bothering to think about.
The dividends.
Right. If you're out of Bitcoin, you're not getting Bitcoin Gold, Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin Diamond, Super Duper Bitcoin, Bitcoin Velociraptor, whatever it is, you're not getting it. So not only do you have to outperform just the market in general, but you also have to outperform the dividend, which isn't easy by any means. And again, why I think a lot of people just need to buy and hold the big stuff.
So I saw an estimate that if you held, let's use our one Bitcoin example. If you held one Bitcoin, your overall revenue from selling dividends, if you will, so selling a fork, maybe not at the peak, but you know, some kind of relative high, mm-hmm. After it was listed on exchanges, you could have easily made like 30% on top of that one Bitcoin. So you'd have 1.3 Bitcoin by just holding one Bitcoin, right?
Right. So are you going to beat that on alts? I don't know. Good luck, but not saying you.
Well, you certainly.
You're not saying you can't. Yeah, I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying it's not super easy to do for new people, I think, you know.
Yeah, and you have to have a much larger risk profile. Your risk profile holding one Bitcoin is whatever Bitcoin's price to US dollars is.
Yeah.
Your risk profile holding an alt is whatever that alt is doing, like whatever's affecting its own price, whether that's news-based, technical-based, whatever. And then the dynamic parameter of whatever Bitcoin is doing.
Exactly.
So one of the challenges that you could run into would be, I'll use Monero as my example, because I really like Monero. I think it's fundamentally a good coin that's not often refuted.
I agree. Yeah.
So you could hold Monero, and Monero has throughout the year done very well. And even though you're holding Monero, it's going up in that US dollar value. Because Bitcoin is so dynamic, the Bitcoin Monero chart has these wild swings where it has cut in half in value and then doubled in value very quickly. And if you're just holding on to that Monero, it could be to your peril, basically, especially if you trade it, but you trade it at the wrong time. What's that price range? It's like 0.035 all the way down to like 0.01.
Yeah, it's huge.
So it's 3 to 4x your Monero that is essentially at risk in that trade, depending on when you enter or exit the trade. That's worrisome, but you can also take advantage of that. So the way to take advantage of that is not to look at XMR USD. So Monero versus the dollar has gone from, in 2017, in January, it was like $11.
Yeah.
And now it's $460 today.
Yeah.
So if you held throughout that entire tenure, sure, you would have made money. But if you traded it and you didn't trade it correctly, you could have lost pretty significantly, actually. Let's see, January 1st, 2017, it was 0.013. So Monero hit 0.013, 1, 2, 3, 4, around five times this year. So even though it was so cheap, it was whatever, $11, $12, it was still not as good as holding Bitcoin several times throughout the year. Now, you had to have timed it pretty poorly, but several times throughout the year, you would have actually lost Bitcoin by trading and for Monero instead.
Yeah.
So what you really want to be doing is trying to take advantage of these market cycles so that you are in an altcoin while it is gaining pace. It's outpacing Bitcoin. and then you're out while it's not outpacing Bitcoin. So when you're looking at a dollar chart, what are you look or a Bitcoin chart, what are you looking for when you're looking at alts in order to try to make this strategic trade?
Yeah, and back to that example real quick, you know, it's kind of like, can you beat the S&P? That's how I see it, right? Can you beat the buy and hold on the S&P?
Right, yeah. So if I'm trading Apple or Facebook stock, is that going to be the S&P?
Right. And that's,
and if not, why be in it?
Right. And that's exactly what you're doing here. So, you know, this isn't trading advice, but here's what I'd do if it were me. I would take your money, divide it in half. Half of it's going to buy and hold Bitcoin, and that's going to include the forks and everything and all that other stuff. The other half of it, you're going to trade alts exclusively, no Bitcoin. And then tell me, you know, after a month, 2 months, 6 months, a year, where did you make more of your money there? that's going to change based on the market cycles, like you're saying, because as Bitcoin pulls back typically in January and alts pull up March through whatever, at least was the case last year, pretty significantly, you're going to need to hop in and out of Bitcoin. And that could mean USD too. You know, USD is another altcoin at this point, right?
Not a great altcoin.
Based on the market, it's just USD. So you're not long Bitcoin if you're in USD. So yeah, you need to think about that. You need to take a hard look at the mirror and say, am I really doing what I should be doing? I want to be a trader. I want to learn how to trade. That's fine. For a lot of people, I just say, you need to realize you're going to be losing money by trading alts. That's just a fact. Again, opportunity costs, things we've already said. So if you're trying to learn how to trade, that's great. That, you know, I'm all about losing money while you're learning to trade. That's important. People need to come to grips with that. But if you're selling your baseball card collection, and instead of paying rent, you're buying, ADA or whatever it is, that's where I think you're going to be running into some problems.
Yeah. And ADA is Cardano, I think.
Cardano. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, some of these do have what you would call like adoption periods or markup cycles. So one of the times where I like trading alts, even though certainly once you include the dividends, because of the season I've been trading alts, it was not the right play.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are seasons where it's incredibly valuable. And you can go look at any chart. I think both of us use TradingView. So you can go to TradingView's website, tradingview.com, and you can chart any of these. And you can chart, in our Monero example, relative to the dollar and relative to BTC. You type XMR BTC, XMR USD, look at them side by side. I've gotten to the point where every altcoin that I own and trade actively, I keep in my watch list with the USD and the BTC chart side by side so that I can look at them both. And I am essentially looking for where in the market cycle are we. And if you look historically, when you hear alt season, that's because it was a period of time where a lot of alts gained tremendous value, not only against the dollar, but against Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was this year. That was it's a seasonal thing, it tends to be. But spring and summer was kind of an altcoin euphoria this year. And then late summer to late November was essentially the downtrend where Bitcoin rose in value so strongly while most alts were consolidating versus the dollar or being relatively flat or smaller gains that they were losing Bitcoin relative value. So if you bought one Bitcoin and you put it in 10 different alts in the spring, you probably had more Bitcoin by June or so.
Mm-hmm.
But if you bought your Bitcoin in June and put it in alts by November, you almost guaranteed had less Bitcoin if you sold all those alts back into Bitcoin because you essentially missed the market cycle. So when people are talking about market cycles, this is why so many of these alt trading charts are hilarious with these huge descending triangles or whatever, and people are trying to predict when is this market cycle going to turn around. So that's this whole buying bottom concept that a lot of traders have is they want to buy an altcoin when it's cheap relative to Bitcoin, and they want to sell an altcoin when it's expensive relative to Bitcoin. So in our Monero example, on a weekly chart, it could have a 2-3 week period where it has a massive markup against Bitcoin, like gains 2 or 3 times its value versus Bitcoin. And then it could have a 10 week decline where it loses it all back. So those are the types of things that you want to be looking at. But how do we predict when that's going to happen? And for me, this is where dollar charts really come in handy. And I want to know if you look at dollar charts for this as well.
Yeah. So I've gone back and forth several times on what to look at and when and why. And currently my conclusive view is basically if something's consolidating, I need to look in the mirror at myself and say, do I want to be in this or do I want to try and play an altcoin? That's usually so for Bitcoin, if Bitcoin's consolidating, which it hasn't really chilled at a zone for too long during this uptrend. But when it does, you have to say, is it okay to be an altcoin now that's kind of low relative to Bitcoin? And how you figure that out is if you're looking at the USD chart, and for my case. So, when I'm looking at the Ethereum ascending triangle that's building for months and it's just consolidating, do I want to be holding Ethereum in that period? No, I don't want to be holding Ethereum. I know what the chart pattern says will happen eventually, but right now at the time, go ahead.
We talked a little bit about this in a previous episode. Ethereum went to like $400 USD, and then it didn't challenge that number again until November. So from June to November, in USD terms, it was never higher than its all-time high. And during that entire time, Bitcoin was making all-time highs. So while it's ranging below its all-time high, you're almost guaranteed to be losing unless you're really swing trading it hard.
Yeah. So while it's forming that pattern, you say to yourself, that's a bullish continuation pattern. It's going to take a long time to play out. It's probably not going to break the horizontal level anytime soon, you know, in the beginning, even after it tried twice and failed. Like that would have been enough for me if I was holding Ethereum at that point in time. But then when you're seeing all these other things, you know, the cloud, the Bollinger Bands flipping, and then it breaks the horizontal level. Those are the times when you have to think, is it better to be in Ethereum right now because it's breaking these
USD?
Those
are patterns you were looking at versus the dollar, right?
Right. These were USD patterns I was looking at because that signaled an end of consolidation. And a lot of people are only looking at USD charts, and that's fine if that's what you want to do. They don't know, most of these people, that they're losing money by only looking at USD charts. They're going to do what they're going to do. I don't have a problem with that. You know, if you're one of these people, that's fine. But you just have to realize that you're losing money. Like we keep saying, you know, if Bitcoin's moving up and your alt isn't, you're losing money. If Bitcoin moves up more than your alt, you're losing money. You know, that's the issue here.
And vice versa, if altcoins across the board are gaining value against Bitcoin and you're not in any of those alts, you're also losing money, but it's on the other side.
Right.
And Bitcoin is historically tough to beat. Just because it's Bitcoin. It's the most bullish asset ever.
Yeah. And the other thing I think people see is, you know, Bitcoin's at whatever it is today, 19, 17, whatever. And they think, I can't get a 2x on this, but I can get a 2x on, I don't know, Sia coin or Strat or ZRX or whatever it is. So I'm going to put my money there. That logic I can kind of understand. But again, you're still losing money.
It depends. And it also depends on which coins you're in.
Yeah.
And some people are altcoin traders, but they're purely fundamental altcoin traders, meaning they're looking for what's a new project, something I can buy as a speculative investment. And I'm not going to trade this. And I know at times I'll lose money against Bitcoin, but I'm buying Dash, for instance, because I think Dash has a promising future. And I'm buying it in the beginning of 2016, and I'm just going to sit on it for 2 years, and I'm taking a risk with that. But that type of investor, if you will, long-term investor buying newer speculative projects that aren't already at like the top of the coin market cap list, top 20 coins or whatever, they probably have a better chance in terms of just holding on to that altcoin for a long time and gaining versus Bitcoin, because they're essentially looking for the steep S-curve portion of that trade so that they're gaining while that new project is being adopted. Your risk in that, not so fast does this great. Like he mines coins, like newer coins, and then he essentially is sitting on a bag of an altcoin that he's waiting for it to be adopted and gain in price as a result of that. And your reward is at the end of that, however long later, you're able to sell it and it's worth far more relative to Bitcoin.
Right. And maybe some people are waiting for that 300x return on something in low sat value. But even then you have to look at like LTC. You know, if you held LTC again when it was in ranging mode and then it broke that range, that was your first signal that it was time to get out. So all these people who are like, I told you so, LTC would pump, blah, 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 it's been on Coinbase. It's like, yeah, it's all it's doing right now is regaining all those losses from the BTC pair. So, and it's back in that range again.
Like, so the way to profitably play that is when ETC last hit 0.02, which was near an all-time high, that's a good time to sell, take your profits if you bought it less than 0.02. And then you're not back in it, no matter what it's doing versus the dollar, until it seems like the right price for you to buy a new swing relative to Bitcoin.
Right.
And the time for Litecoin, the time to buy that new swing wasn't until I think it hit 0.006. Is that right? So it went all the way down to 0.00536 on what I'm looking at, which to catch that would have been extremely difficult. But let's say if you just bought when it was under 0.008, 0.009, like somewhere under 0.01, and your assumption is this at some point, this is going to retest the all-time high versus Bitcoin and be 0.02. I can double my Bitcoin by buying this under 0.01. That's a perfectly valid strategy. But the US dollar price of Litecoin, when you're paying 0.01 Bitcoin, the US dollar price is higher than you were probably last in it if you were playing it the right way. The US dollar price at that point is around $100 or something like that when you're buying back in, and you probably last sold it when it was, I don't know, $50, $60, $47, $45, something like that, whenever it was 0.02 before. So it can feel versus the dollar like you're buying in higher, but you're actually buying in at a much better price relative to Bitcoin than you did before.
Right. And I think a lot of people, especially the newer people, are playing the shorter game, and they see like Bitcoin's at a high price again, or I can, like, LTC's up 300% in a month or something. Like, I got an LTC below 100 and I made all this money. That's great. I agree completely. Awesome. I'm glad. And don't doubt the potential for that. But if you're in it for a while, you come to realize that it's all about the LTC or the pairs, the LTC, BTC, you know, the BTC pairs specifically.
So we're both advocates of making sure we're buying the pair, the BTC pair, at the right time, and relatively unconcerned with what the US dollar price is, other than the fact that it can be a important indicator for impulsion, if you will. So in your Ethereum example, or in the Litecoin example, whichever one, I think the Ethereum one's just easier to visualize. Mm-hmm. During that multi-month consolidation of Ethereum, it's nearing this time where something's going to happen. So the bet we're making when we get into Ethereum at the end of that USD consolidation period is that when this is done, it's going to create a moment for impulsion, or a moment of a rapid price change up or down. So the bet that you're making is that the pattern, the ascending triangle versus the dollar, is setting up in a way that the move out of that triangle will be fast enough to gain faster than Bitcoin. So that was the bet that you made and that I made and a lot of other people made. Mm-hmm. But it didn't really have anything to do with thinking Ethereum was going to go up in price. I think everybody thinks Ethereum's probably going to have a bright future versus the US dollar. Mm-hmm. The question is, was it going to be able to outpace Bitcoin? And that is why it adds a dynamic to your trading strategy, because you're not just predicting what is Ethereum going to do against the dollar. You're predicting what is Bitcoin going to do against the dollar, and therefore what is Ethereum going to do against Bitcoin. So you're introducing a whole new layer of possible thought so that you can, in this process, maximize your potential Bitcoin.
And if you're new, some people will disagree with me here, but if you're new, I think you should just avoid the BTC pairs and just trade the USD pairs so you can learn patterns and signals and blah, blah, blah. Because if you're looking at all these things trying to make a decision, I think you're just going to get analysis paralysis, and you're going to be super confused and not have a foundation of strategy of any kind because there's just too much going on. I have a hard time looking at everything, and I've been doing this for a while, you know, so I don't know how people who are new coming into this look at all of this, because when I started, most everything was either Altcoin and BTC pairs and Bitcoin was in USD pairs. Like, that's just how it was. But mm-hmm. that's definitely been changing recently, you know, especially with Tether, the evolution of Tether and the USDT pairs being offered on many exchanges.
Yeah. So I kind of have mixed feelings mm-hmm. about this. Mm-hmm. I think there's value in trading the BTC pair in the chart. A chart's a chart is a chart. I think And people that are full believers in technical analysis of looking at a chart and making decisions based on the chart, it's not a huge deal which chart you're looking at. If you believe in the fact of the way technical analysis works, the numbers, all the fun, everything that's going on there, you can trade any of them. What happens is the USD charts tend to make things a little more clear for someone that's used to trading stocks mm-hmm. versus someone that's used to trading versus Bitcoin. Because when I'm looking at your average Bitcoin chart, an alt pair that looks bullish versus Bitcoin, like what your average popular crypto trader would say, this is so bullish. In a stock world, it looks incredibly bearish because it looks like you're calling a bottom or like something that's fresh off a bottom and you're essentially trying to catch the trend before it confirms the trend. What I've enjoyed is I like looking at the US dollar pairs for determining more classical indicators of seeing what is a bullish pattern and what is presenting an opportunity to be a high velocity trade going forward.
Yeah.
Do you have general thoughts on this velocity concept? Because I know I certainly do. And this is something I've been able to better form in my head, but I'm curious if this is something you actively use.
I don't think I use it the same way you do, but I don't know what your angle is, other than just like chart patterns or signals off the cloud. Yeah, I don't think there's any problem with trading any chart, period. You just treat it as a chart, like you said. But I think when people are, again, when people are looking at the BTC pair and looking at the USD pair and looking at 17 different timeframes and 3,500 different altcoins, it's like, no wonder you're losing money. You're not focused on anything. You know, again, separate your portfolio 50-50 and then trade five altcoins on a couple of time frames, whatever it is, just to learn something. Otherwise, you're just, it's like the blind leading the blind, trying to figure out what's going on, you know?
Mm-hmm. So when I talk about these velocity moments, there's a guy on Twitter named Beatcoin that I think does a really great job of expressing this. But essentially, he looks at Bitcoin charts a lot too, but when he's looking for these moments of impulsion, if you will, he's looking for, when is this chart aligned to make an explosive move? So when is it reaching the end of consolidation? And another one that right now is happening on a whole lot of alts, I'm staring at the Siacoin dollar chart right now, which I guarantee you not a ton of people are looking at the Siacoin versus the dollar chart in a technical manner.
Mm-hmm.
But Siacoin is pushing the US dollar all-time high. So what I am curious about when I'm looking at that is, well, when Siacoin breaks the all-time high, it goes in price discovery mode, and the velocity of finding what the new cap is, what's the new high, is a moment where you can make profit versus Bitcoin potentially. Because if it ranges quickly, then it can gain value versus Bitcoin. This is a time where it's leaving consolidation because it's now in an all-time high versus the dollar, and it's looking for the next thing. It's looking for the next resistance level. So several trades I've made over the past couple of weeks that have been profitable for me have actually been looking for what are the Fib resistances versus the dollar, and then comparing what that might be on the Bitcoin chart. So what are the Fib resistances, and what's that mean? Why do those numbers seem to stick?
I mean, that makes sense to me when you look at the USD pairs, even like psychological levels. Like if you look at Ethereum, a lot of those hit like 150, 250, 350, 450, whatever it is. So there's that, which is nice to pay attention to. And then there's, like you were saying, the Fib levels, which are these magic numbers that for some reason mean something.
They just work.
They just work. Like I can't explain it. It's kind of like magnets, man. You can't explain that. You just go from high to low or low to high on the indicator itself on TradingView, for instance, and it gives you these extensions. And yeah, from there you can calculate. Again, that's another like step, though. People who don't know what they're doing, really, who are doing more than they need to be doing to try to learn these things. But that's certainly one avenue and strategy you can use. Look at the Fib extensions on the USD pairs that are consolidating, convert that to the BTC pair, and then set that for your target or whatever, your exit for that trade.
And the way you draw that is when you use a, there's a tool within TradingView, and you're putting the top, the one on the all-time high or whatever your peak is, and then you're putting the zero on the valley within that trading range. And then the possible price resistances are each of these levels, the 0.236, 0.5, 0.618. And then once you go past the one, now you're in this price exploration period and you have the 1.618, which in common stocks, that's like the magic target. Like that's like the most you can probably expect most of the time.
Yeah.
What we see in crypto is actually these will hit, once they hit a new all-time high, these can go in price discovery because there's so much new money flowing in that you could hit the 1.618, the 2.618, the 3.618, the 4.236. Excuse me. I recently added the 4.618. I think that's the highest I can go in TradingView. In the Siacoin example, that is four times the US dollar price. So that's going from 2 cents to over 8 cents to get to that 3.618 to 4.236 range, mm-hmm. which is crazy. But that's obviously a time that could happen pretty quickly in crypto land because crypto is crazy, a lot of new money. And relative to Bitcoin, it still may look cheap because remember, it may be an all-time high versus the dollar, but it's still looking really low versus Bitcoin. So when people are buying and they're buying with Bitcoin, they have a lot of purchasing power because they're buying with Bitcoin that has appreciated in value so much. So all these things work in a dynamic fashion to create these potentially huge increases in price in the US dollar charts.
And another thing you can do if an alt like dumped for weeks, you can FIB it the other way. So from that high to the low, instead of like the most recent high low, but a high low like weeks back, that'll also give you resistance levels on the way up. I don't know if like, that seems like common sense to me, but a lot of people, I think, don't realize that you can do that or that's something to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. And that allows you to set those targets like we talked about in the last episode of where might be worth selling, because at one of those resistance levels, it's going to start consolidating again. And then it goes through the whole pattern again. So it stops raising in value against Bitcoin and it starts going sideways against Bitcoin or going down against Bitcoin if Bitcoin's being bullish or whatever.
Right. So like the 4.618 on the USD example might just be like 0.618 on like the grand scheme of things from high to low.
Right. Yeah. So let's see, buying versus the dollar. When do you go to fiat full out? Like at some point, I like to say, if Bitcoin goes up too fast, alts go down. If Bitcoin goes down too fast, alts go down. There's not a direct like inverse correlation between Bitcoin and alts. The magic periods for altcoins is really when Bitcoin is ranging. So Bitcoin is sideways or it's going like slowly up or slowly down. That gives altcoins a chance to outpace Bitcoin. So at what point would you say, I don't want to be in Bitcoin right now. I don't want to be in alts right now. I want to be in US dollars. Like when do you kind of make those decisions?
That's a very rare circumstance for me. I'm usually always in something. I know the other day, I guess, you know, if you need the cash for bids on Bitcoin, like that's an example of not being in alts. Mm-hmm.
So your scenario is you sold at 19,000. So now you have US dollars that you want to get back in the system.
Right. So if you sell above 19 and then you have money, you can either, well, you could have either bought the alt pairs at that point, if you think the alt pairs were going to go up. But in my case, for Bitcoin Cash being added to Coinbase, I was pretty sure everything was going to come down relative to Bitcoin Cash, which was going to rise just because it was new and it's the shiny thing there. And that's pretty much what's happened so far, at least in the USD side. So Ethereum's down, Litecoin's down, and Bitcoin's down, with Bitcoin Cash being up from whatever it was to what it is now. So in that case, you know, I was just waiting for the drop. Even before Bitcoin Cash got listed, I was waiting for the drop. So the cash isn't in anything else. It's just in a bid for me. I'd rather play it like that than play alts waiting for a drop. I don't know. That's just me specifically. But
when you do something like that, you say you sell at 19,000. My assumption is you are almost never, or maybe never, all out, right? Like you're not 100% of your Bitcoin is now in cash. It's some percentage of your Bitcoin that you're willing to trade actively, right?
Right. So I don't know if it's between 25 and 50% of what I have is being traded actively and the rest of it's just sitting, which I don't directionally trade at all. I just hold. And again, that's another strategy. Mm-hmm. It's like the alts versus Bitcoin strategy. It's the same thing. Like, can my directional trading beat buy and hold? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But together, you know, for me and me alone, me specifically, it works just because that's what I like to do, you know. I like capturing some of that directionality on occasion. I don't like swinging around my whole balance every time I think it's going to go up or down, because sometimes I'm not completely dead on, either on the drop, the rise, or where it's going to go. Sometimes I miss that, and I don't want to miss all that stuff, you know, by trading all of my balance every time. And I think I think too many people are trading all of their balance all the time and making way too many trades, being just over trading, period. In general, my advice would be hold more than you trade, trade less than you are, and go outside more often.
Yeah. So, and that's probably where a lot of people's stress comes from, is because they say, well, I have my one Bitcoin or my 0.1 Bitcoin or whatever, and I want to turn that into two Bitcoin. So I'm going to put this entire Bitcoin at risk, if you will, in an active trading account so that I can be more likely to gain more. And unless you're very careful or very good, then you can just as easily turn your one Bitcoin into 0.5 Bitcoin.
Or if you're on leverage, now, zero Bitcoin. And if you're trading alts with leverage, very quickly does that turn around for you. Even on 10x alts, like the margin of error you have on that is very small.
I think it's worth recognizing that trading on leverage for a new trader is dangerous. If you are comfortable, then go for it. Like maybe if you come from a leverage trading background. But it's worth noting that trading on margin is a challenge for sure for almost anybody, especially new people. Mm-hmm. And you're also, when you trade on margin, you're putting your upfront capital at risk. So if you trade on margin, if you have your one Bitcoin and you trade on 10x, it's like you're trading 10 Bitcoin, except you're now putting that that one Bitcoin at risk of becoming zero Bitcoin, because it loses whatever that ends up being, what, 10%, right? You're putting your whole account at risk. So if it loses 10%, now you've lost the whole Bitcoin. You haven't lost 10%. So you get 10x the gains if it goes up, but you have the chance of losing everything if it goes down. And Bitcoin and alts both love to spike, and they love to stop hunt, if you will, or crush longs and crush shorts before it makes the move it's going to make. Mm-hmm. That's super popular for Bitcoin and for alts. Can you describe what it means? Let's say Bitcoin's nearing 10,000, and it doesn't matter which direction it's inevitably going to go. What's a common thing it might do to crush longs and shorts both?
I mean, this happened to me. I'm looking at the LTC USD chart, and it broke the ascending triangle. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get in. And then it pulls back to the throwback, and it's like, well, I just threw that money away. So that's a prime example of, throwbacks happen. I said this in last Brave New Coin article, but you see throwbacks happen on everything, on any chart pattern. So, you know, if it breaks a horizontal resistance, oftentimes it'll come back to retest that horizontal resistance. We saw it in the Ethereum ascending triangle, especially. It stood and held, you know, tested that zone three or four times before going higher. So if you bought at the top of that flag and you're holding, you know, you're going to be concerned because you're pretty negative while that's ranging. Most people buy after it's broken out at the top. It drops, they panic, they sell the bottom, which is the bottom of the flag. And then they don't get back in, or they don't follow through with it. And then it goes beyond to the target of 800 in this case for Ethereum. So it often, you'll see like lightsabers, it's often referred to, where it's just like wicks on both sides of the candle before things happen in the direction you think it's going to happen. And if you're on 100x leverage, you're just going to lose everything. You don't even need to be on 100x, you know, even 10-20x, you're going to lose everything. My personal sweet spot I like is like 5x. 5 to 10x is like safe for me, because just based on my signals and what I do, like it works for me, where I win more than I lose in that range as far as margin's concerned. But when I bump it up to like 100-200x, it doesn't go well for me.
Yeah. And a lot of people trade at high margin when they're trading like 4x and stuff.
Yeah.
But those are moving with these tiny little blips. They're not moving 10% daily or more, like a lot of these altcoins especially, but even Bitcoin has had 10-20% days. So predicting exactly what's going to happen can really cost you a lot. I like your example of throwback. This is something that I like to do as well. I got lucky on this last night. Or maybe it was what I should have expected. I don't know. But whenever something breaks whatever you were aiming for, like, so you say, I'm not getting in this trade until it does X. Maybe it breaks a certain resistance and then you say you're getting in. So Zcash versus Bitcoin on the Bitcoin chart, it was yesterday. It had several straight days going up, but it has this big gap between the daily Kijun and the bottom of the cloud. So mm-hmm. to me, and that's also, there's no 50-day moving average, there's no 200-day moving average. So to me, I see like nearly 100% possible gain by waiting until it gets past the Kijun. So I'm waiting until that last big resistance is there. And then my sell point, or at least where I'll like move my stops to, would be once it gets close to the cloud. So I see a potential like 100% gain. But what I decided, because it broke through as soon as the daily ended, it closed the day right at that resistance. And then as soon as the new day opened, it shot up. That's pretty common sometimes. Yeah, it'll open quickly above the prior resistance. But I didn't FOMO in. I didn't buy in already 10% of my target gone, essentially. What I did is I set an order for a limit order back just above that prior resistance, essentially anticipating a low time frame pullback. Mm-hmm. To retest the Kijun in the shorter time frame so that I get the order where I wanted it. And by not chasing that candle up, there was a chance I missed that bid. You know, like it might not hit. And what I decided was, well, I'm okay with that. That's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. But if I can get it and I get it on a throwback and it's even better because now that resistance became support, now my trade has much less risk associated with it and I get more profit because I didn't chase the candle a third of the way up or whatever.
Right.
So that's an example of being able to use that throwback to your advantage.
Yeah, chasing rarely works unless things are just ballistic. Chasing almost always ends in tears for me.
Yeah, I've chased before and been okay. Like if you're in a super, super, super bullish market, mm-hmm. maybe.
Yeah.
But you can get burned on that pretty good. Like somebody's got to buy the top in every one of these trades. Somebody buys the top. Like there's always other person on the other end of that trade.
Right.
So, and that this kind of goes into one of our questions. Bitwagon Hopper asked, "What time frame should we be trading in when working with the cloud, or I guess with anything?" So in that scenario, you might be looking at trading the low time frame in order to find your entry, but you have your broader target based on the high time frame, based on the daily or the weekly or the 3-day chart, whatever that is. How do you use time frames in your trades?
So I've kind of evolved. I think people see time frames as like points, like hard lines that are like physical barriers, but you kind of have to like think of them as just like zooming in or out on a microscope, telescope, whatever. You know, if you want to see inside of a candle, then you go to a lower time frame. If you want to take signals that typically make more movements, you go to higher time frame as far as just the payoff is concerned. Typically, you don't see giant moves off of a 5-minute, you know, pattern.
Mm-hmm. The other issue, you might off of a 1-hour or some 4-hour.
Right. But the other issue with low time frames is if there's no liquidity, if things aren't really moving, you're going to get signals that are garbage anyway, or you're going to get signals that are just wrong. So unless stuff's really moving, you don't want to use super low time frames in general, especially in alts, but even in Bitcoin. But when things are going crazy, yeah, go to a 15-minute because there's signals to be had there for sure. You know, when I see a pump or a dump, I go often hourly or below and just look at the structure and see, is there an Adam Eve forming? Is there head and shoulders have forming? Is there any sort of reversal forming on lower time frames that might signal an entry for me to help with the higher time frames? But in general, I'm focusing on hourly, 4-hour, daily. I think weekly is a little too slow for most of these coins, unless it's like Doge, where it has this historic weekly cycle where it pumps and dumps.
And for most people's patience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most people trading crypto don't have the patience for a weekly chart.
Yeah.
But there are some people that trade altcoins extremely well on a weekly chart because they're patient and because they're not over trading. You know, they're looking at broad market cycles and they're trying to play those market cycles.
And what I always do when I first sit down and look at a chart of any coin, I go to high time frames first and work my way down. That way I have some sort of viewpoint and vantage point of where this could be going on higher time frames, higher time frame always wins. So that's going to affect the lower time frames. Again,
if higher time frame always wins in the sense of whatever you see in the higher time frame is more likely to come true, and you'll see the impacts of that in the smaller time frames.
Right. So if I'm seeing consolidation on a higher time frame, I have to assume on the lower time frames, it's just going to range in that zone and nothing crazy is going to happen until it breaks the higher time frame horizontal support or resistance or whatever it is. You know, in Ethereum's case, for that, we keep going back to this ascending triangle. If you're on a low time frame, you might be thinking, oh man, this is going to keep falling, when in actuality, it's just filling in the triangle on a high time frame. So that's why you always have to keep in mind, at the very least, the daily, what's going on while you're trading the low time frames. Because otherwise, again, not only are you going to get the wrong signal, but you're going to be convinced that it's going to happen the way you think it's going to happen, when in actuality, all it's doing is filling in a range, you know?
Sure. So let's look at one that's specific, and it leads into another question, and we can talk about high time frame, low time frame. This is one I've been actively trading. I don't know if you've watched it or not, but both Phil and Crypto Gav asked, what are our thoughts on the Qtum trade? So Qtum, this is a smart contracts platform, Ethereum killer. If people don't know this one, it's similar to Neo in some ways. I personally have liked it okay because they have more projects actually running on it. It's very popularly traded in Korea. Anyway, I've owned this one for a pretty long time, which historically has been dumb because it was a fine trade for a long time based on my entry, like below my initial entries were below 300K BTC, which was a perfectly decent entry until about October. And then it just got pummeled. And I kept having to redraw this channel versus Bitcoin. So I was creating this descending channel, or you could also have made it a pitchfork, a descending pitchfork, where it was just tracking this downward move. And this goes back into all our topics. So versus the dollar, you could actually see the opposite, where it was channeling sideways, but it was also creating a weird triangle, like essentially a consolidation pattern versus the dollar. But like with Ethereum or any of these others, if you go sideways versus the dollar for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 months, that got destroyed versus Bitcoin over those same months.
Yeah.
So for me versus Bitcoin, this reached like peak depression, peak levels of, oh my God, this is the worst crypto trade I've ever made. Approximately December 7th, when it hit 61,000 Satoshis roughly against Bitcoin, after a high of 560. And this is the bottom of a channel that I redrew. And usually when your pain is the most, that might be a good time to buy.
It's true.
Simultaneously against the dollar, this is why these dollar charts are interesting. It was finally starting to show some signs of moving out of this ranging triangle thing that it was doing, and it was breaking through some of these lower boundary fib numbers. And what's crazy about what this one did is then it went on in a matter of, I think, 12 days to gain about 600% versus Bitcoin. So it went from being everyone's most pressing trade that had ever owned this cryptocurrency asset to being the darling of all pumpers of the week. So it gained 600%. So the question is, like, now what do you do? Do you sell? Where do you sell a trade like this? So have you been watching this at all?
Not really, only other than Twitter. And there's a few things there. The number one thing is, when you're in an alt, where do you sell if it's dropping? If you're like you or me, which sounds like you're very much like me in this respect, as it's dropping, you're thinking it's got to turn around eventually. I'm just going to hold it. Like, so my ETC position, my XRP position, XRP is the same as this. I'm just going to hold it. I don't care where it goes. I know I'm losing money being in these trades, not being in Bitcoin. It's going to turn around eventually. This isn't like a great mindset for everyone in general, but I'm going to hold it. It's going to drop. It's whatever. That's number one. And yeah, you are redrawing the downtrend over and over as this is going down. The other thing is, if it's on a USD chart, maybe it's not even ranging. Maybe it's actually pulling up, but it's losing against Bitcoin. So again, for people who
going
are looking
up too slowly,
right? So people are looking at these USD charts again, think they're doing so amazing because it's in a bull market seemingly on the USD chart, but it's not gaining what it is on Bitcoin. again, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Just realize that that is a thing and exists, and you're losing money there. That if you're okay with that, whatever. I don't care.
Now, the smart thing is to not be okay with that. For
what it's worth. I agree.
Even in our scenarios, what you could be holding, you mentioned Ripple. Maybe you hold Ripple because you think it's going to get listed on Coinbase.
Yeah.
And by the time you're ready to buy, because the announcement happens, it's too late. So you say, I'm going to take the short-term downtrend because I think within the next 2 months, this is going to have a big news event that's going to make up for that and more. However, normally your better thing is to buy when it's cheap. Like, you can still buy several altcoins once they've confirmed reversal of some sort. Mm-hmm. Or they've broken out versus the dollar out of their ranging period, and you have a better buy price than I did on Qdom, for instance. Mm-hmm. So like that is the smarter play, because you made those gains on Bitcoin, you bought Qdom cheaper, and you are in the trade less to make more. Like that's obviously the benefit there. However, you have to time that in the way to be able to make sense of it. So
yeah, you have to be awake. That's the number one thing. Like you have to be awake. You have to be looking at all these charts. You have to have some sort of alerts set. Looking at this now on the 4 hour, there's an Adam Eve at the bottom of this. There was an Adam Eve before that didn't end up going too far, but that's what definitely helped this, or even an Adam M double bottom situation. Double bottom. So yeah, your question was, where does it go from here? Where do you get out?
Right.
Again, I look at horizontal levels. So I look at where was like the break point on the way down. And there were several. They're not super clean on they're not super clean on Qdom, but there are several that have been broken on the way up at this point.
When it broke 120K, that's what took it to depression levels. So it had previously bottomed at 120K, and then it went up, I don't know, 50%. And then when it ranged back down, once it broke 120K, so it broke what would have been a double bottom. Double bottoms are dangerous, for what it's worth. It broke what would have been a double bottom, and then it was price discovery on the bottom side. It was price discovery on the negative, and that's what took it to those lows.
Yeah.
So that was like the big first horizontal win on the way back up as well.
And when you're looking for horizontal support resistance, go to a super high time frame. Like I'm on the weekly for Qdom. I can see all the wicks line up almost exactly to where it stopped on the vertical on the way back up. It hasn't closed above this zone ever before. So maybe you sell some in this zone. Maybe you sell most of it here. Let it run past this if it's going to run. But for the most part, on these alts that are pulling back up, you're going to be looking at high time frame horizontals where there's clear resistance in this case, just lots of wicks that, you know, there's never been a close above this level that we're at now. So is this the time? I don't know, but it might be, you know, maybe it isn't. Maybe you should be selling some here, not you specifically, but in general, just, you know, that's what you want to look at as far as support resistance on high time frames.
Yeah. And in this example, also newer coins are harder to trade because they have less history. So therefore, the prior resistance, prior highs or prior lows are less likely to be new resistance levels or whatever you want to call that. Mm-hmm. So this one, it has essentially one, it's on one prior resistance, and then it has two more after this. I have those two lines drawn. The current one also aligns with the Kumo top on the daily cloud with doubled Ichimoku settings. If people listen to a prior episode or if they've watched your videos on how to use the Ichimoku system, that nailed this first resistance zone because that's essentially where it's ranging right now. So what I did on this one is I drew the two lines above this. So if it's at 330 to 350K now, the next two peaks are 460K or so. And then the all-time high versus Bitcoin is around 575. So what I've done is now I've narrowed down all the way to the 1 hour, and I'm seeing what's it doing once it hits these resistance levels.
Right.
And for me, what made this worth staying in was that it didn't hit the top of the channel at 160K or so and immediately tank downwards. It actually started flagging and keeping a narrow channel close to that resistance level that hinted to me that it had another leg. So I stayed in, and then it bam popped up again, and it got to where we are now, which is the next clear resistance level. And what I noticed this time is it's doing the same thing again. It's flagging again. So this would be a time where I'm really tempted based on like where my average price is, like I'm not underwater anymore, I'm at a profit, maybe I should sell. Except for the fact that it's flagging again, and this, even though it's made 600%, it looks like it may have legs in it. Now, this could fail, but I'm looking at the low time frame now and an hourly, because if it doesn't fail, then there's more potential profit for me and I can move my stops up yet again. And if it moves up, the measured move currently would go from 330, whatever it is, up above the first big resistance level. So it would basically send it to possible all-time high retests from this one. And now you're going from a whole new dynamic in terms of profit levels, potentially. What would be smart here is to set to move your stops up. So that prevents you from becoming a bag holder again. You're not right. going to like get stuck in Qtum for another 6 months or something. Yeah. If you move your stops up to some reasonable zone below this new pennant. So yeah. like it might fake out. So what I would do personally is if the bottom of the pennant is say 320K, maybe your stop is 290K. So like I'm not going to maximize my profit if this pennant fails. If this pennant succeeds, then I get all those new profits. If this pennant fails, then I'm out at 290K and I did okay. So that's the way I look at it.
And that hits on another like psychological problem people have dealing with. They'll hold trades that are down like 200,000%, you know, and as soon as it hits break even, they'll sell it all. It's like you just held a negative 10x position and you're selling as soon as it hits break even though the chart looks good. Like there are obviously exceptions to the rule, and I personally when I'm in leverage, I like to sell if it, you know, if it gets down like near margin call and I'm back at break even. If the chart doesn't look good, I'm out immediately because I realized that's a blessing at that point. But if you're holding for months, you know, you held through lows whatever, and the chart looks good, why would you sell here? Like no. Hold it. Wait for the move to keep happening. Wait for some weakness and then sell, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it looks illogical. Like it gained 600% from lows.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
That's an incredible gain for someone that bought the low.
Right.
But if the chart is showing strong and you held on the promise of more this whole time, like selling for a 10% gain is just, it's just psychological hell to get a 10% gain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a chance of a situation of being greedy. Like if the chart now was not setting up to potentially move more, I would be out. Absolutely. You should move your stops, but like don't limit yourself on the possible gains, because if it does reach an all-time high, I already had somebody say they sold at the top of the channel essentially. So they sold close to their break even and then they missed this last leg, which was another 20-30%.
Right.
If this thing breaks the all-time high, it could be more ridiculous than we can possibly imagine. You know, like we saw what IOTA did. It could IOTA went ballistic. And you know, you don't want to miss out on that if you've put in the effort of, and it is effort, psychological effort of holding through not having Bitcoin and having this altcoin that whole time. So that would be the way that I would look at that.
Yeah, and if you're holding through like 50% losses to break even, that's like 100% move, and then you're missing out on the upside of that. So that's even more losses that you're missing. It's just like, it's just all bad, all of it. But yeah, don't be a bag holder for another 6 months on something that clearly isn't going to keep going.
Eventually this will dump, and you don't want to be a bag holder when it dumps. But don't limit yourself too much now. All right, let's do one last question. Should be a quick one. Crypto Cred, nice guy on Twitter, says, why is the 6 hour cloud catching Keijin bounces so much cleaner than the 4 hour? He's talking about Bitcoin here. So he is saying that the 6 hour chart is essentially, with the Ichimoku system, is doing a better job than the 4 hour in terms of where the Keijin bounce happens.
Yeah. So it depends on your settings, but I'm going to assume he's using 2030 or 2060, 12030. Yeah, doubled. I think part of that is because we're seeing an influx of institutional people and they really like the 6 hour time frame. That's just speculation, but that's kind of what I think of it as. I don't know. I go back and forth because I see 4 hour bounces that don't quite reach the Keijin. And then I'm like, well, there's my bid that it missed completely, even though the idea was right. The timing was right. I was just out of the range that it pulled back to because I didn't spread out my bids wide enough, you know? So yeah, you can always go to 6 hour, and I'm seeing it more and more, especially with Bitcoin. I haven't seen it too much in altcoins, but I'd have to take a look. I'd assume that Ethereum and Litecoin on the 6 hour, because of institutional interest, looks really good for signals as well. Yeah, it's something to look to in the future, definitely.
In general, is it worth saying that you want to be using time frames that other people may be using, like signals that are going to...
I go back and forth on
that. Are signals that are going to trigger other people important?
Yeah, I mean, it's like watching, watching zones on high time frame alts, like we're talking about for Qdom. Like, it's on the chart. Everyone's going to be looking at that. For cloud signals on doubled, it's hard to say. Like, it just happens to line up with a lot of stuff most of the time. Like, it gets lucky often enough to where you shouldn't not use it. I don't know whether it's worth always considering the 6 hour over the 4 hour. Sometimes the support levels line up where it's pretty close. I checked we hit the 12 hour Kijun on Coinbase on that drop to like 14-15K. I didn't have bids there. I don't think anybody should have bids there. Like, that was an extreme fringe case where that happened, but that's where it bounced from. So,
and it doesn't mean unless you're on margin, it doesn't mean a purchase at the 4 or 6 hour occasion was a bad one, because it actually quickly spiked back up.
Right.
So if you bought at, say, 16.3 or something, I actually helped someone buy around that zone, then they're still doing fine. Like, they bought the dip, and it may not be the last dip. They may have to average in more, but, you know, they didn't buy the top. They didn't buy at 19,000. They bought at 16,000. So that's already a $3,000 advantage just by being a little more patient.
Yeah, and that's where my bids were. They were above and below 4 hour Kijun on every exchange that I had money. So it is what it is. You know, it didn't hit the 12 hour Kijun on every exchange. It just hit it on Coinbase. So just real quickly, you know, if it's looking like it's going to pull back, it's always worth spreading stuff out, looking at multiple timeframes, looking at support levels on high timeframes, or, you know, resistance levels, whatever you're doing. Definitely. But I like the 4 hour the best.
Yeah, I trade mostly on daily and 4 hour. And then I zoom in on like the 1 hour and maybe 30 minute, depending on the coin and whatever.
Yeah.
What I'm peeking at. All right, so wrapping it up, let's quickly do coin of the week. Josh, what are you looking at this week?
Well, I mentioned Sia Coin a few times already. I have a history with Sia Coin. I got in at 33, out at 77, then it proceeded to go to like 500 or whatever it went to. So again, when we're talking about Qdom, like, don't be afraid to have some ridiculous upside targets when things are in a bull market like we are now, sort of, for alts. I hesitate to use the phrase alts are back, but, you know, don't be afraid to...
If Carpe Noctem says alts are back, then it's certainly cursed.
Don't be afraid.
It's almost over.
Don't be afraid to let the runners run, you know, if you're in a winning trade.
Cool.
And you like... go ahead.
Your mine is Stratus, or Strat. And this is, I'll express the good things, and I'll express the danger first. The danger of this one is, in 2017, Strat has gone up an enormous amount, because its run in the spring was so massive, that on the year it is up still like 10x, even though it's down for the last like 5 months straight versus Bitcoin. So the zone from the 2017 start to the 2017 now is enormous, even though it's down and it's showing signs of new uptrend. However, Strat is now in the daily cloud, and there's an edge-to-edge trade, and on the doubled settings, the TK cross has not quite happened, but it's almost. It's on its second day in the cloud, and it's still just kind of chilling in a maybe ascending triangle, maybe bear flag, depending on how you want to look at that.
Yeah.
But it's supported by the Tinkin, the Kijun, and the upside of this, the top of the cloud, would be 150,000 sats, and it's at 66 now. So that's 2.5 times its current Bitcoin relative value. I'm willing to make that bet. So I actually had a bag of Strat that was too early. Now I have 3 times that amount. I'm in on this trade.
I went from bag holder to believer.
Basically. And one more thing, because this was the topic of the show about the US dollar compatible component. If you look at the dollar chart, its current price is almost on the nose with prior high from mid-May. So Strat retraced after May versus the dollar throughout summer and fall, and now it's retesting prior highs. If it breaks the all-time high, that's my signal that we have a new journey of price discovery, and it'll go from, it's $11 right now, the 1.618 is $17, the 2.618 is $27. So that's the 2.618 is the top of the cloud, basically. That's our 2.5 times value. Mm-hmm. So if it hits the 2.618, that's essentially the top of the cloud on Ichimoku. And that's how I would be viewing this trade. If it has a chance to get beyond that, then you're talking about mania territory for Strat. And who knows what could happen. I'll move up my stops, et cetera, et cetera. But that's my game plan.
Yeah. You know, the very last thing, you know, it's hard to not want to trade these signals when you see them because, you know, like they're high probability, blah, blah, blah. But again, it's like, are you going to hold through Bitcoin consolidating, or are you going to take these signals that may or may not play out, that may or may not benefit from Bitcoin being wherever it is at the time? You know, these are all things to consider. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely. And position sizing as well. I just said I tripled down.
Yeah.
But it's not like it's 100% of my portfolio or even 10% right. of my portfolio. Like, I'm not going all in on Strat. Like, that's in an altcoin, that's probably pretty dangerous to go all in on one, unless you just generally have very little at risk or you're willing to risk everything.
Yeah. Yeah. The Strat's good.
Yeah. Strat could be rejected by these all time high US dollar prices and go back to $5. That's totally possible. Anyway. All right. This was fun. Another episode in the books. Josh, where do people need to go to find you?
Twitter, YouTube, Carpe Noctem, and Brave New Coin. The best TA on the internet. Let's be real here, folks. Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Awesome. Definitely follow Carpe Noctem, all the places, and follow Ledger Status on Twitter. Go to ledgerstatus.com. And if you guys enjoyed this episode, I hope you'll give it a rating in iTunes. That helps. You know, we cracked the top 20 in tech.
Whoa.
Doesn't matter to anybody but me. humble bragging. All right. We'll catch y'all next time.
Sounds good.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe.